some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. It's the Thursday show, and we've got an action-packed hour of adventure for you. We're going to be welcoming LGBT author Jace Payne in just a minute. His book, Dark South Shifter, is a gay thriller, and it's kind of like reading an episode of True Blood, except LGBT and probably a lot more scary and thrilling and all of that good stuff. We're going to talk to him in just a minute. So Jace is on the line. He's on hold. So Jace, hang tight real quick. I want to recap what we've done earlier this week and tell you what's going to be happening tomorrow, because we have a change for the Friday night dance party. It's going to be Friday day. So it's kind of been an LGBT week, and we've been covering everything from Transgender Tuesday with Trucker Patty. Last night was Super Gay Radio with Rob Watson. He's a writer, author, personality, and hosts his own show on Saturday nights at KSCO 1080 AM out of Santa Cruz, California. You can always check it out at outinsantacruz.com at 7 p.m. on Saturday nights. And then tomorrow, our Friday dance party really makes sense, because our guest tomorrow is live from Paris, France. It's Jules Day, and her album Daydream makes sense that we're doing the show during the day, because at Friday night, it'll be like 2 or 3 in the morning, and, you know, for musicians, that's probably like a good thing. But, you know, I just kind of roll the dice and figure if we're going to have a musician on the show, probably having them at like 5 or 6 their time is probably a better time of night than trying to get them at 2 or 3 in the morning. So we've got Jules Day, and her album Daydream is what we're a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So make sure to set your clocks for that. If you have any questions about that, you can always follow the show right here on Blog Talk Radio. There's a little button that says follow right below my picture, and it will send you a text or an email, your choice, every day that we have a live broadcast. So that way you're always getting the correct link for every day that we're on. I say that because every day is recorded and then archived. So if for some reason you missed the show live, you can always click the link and go back and listen. We want you to do that as often as possible, and of course, share it with your friends. But this way, you can always stay in touch and never have to worry about missing anything. I will also tell you a couple of other announcements. All of the Monday through Thursday shows, I'm doing the replays a little differently. You can still always catch them here on Blog Talk Radio, so I'm not taking that away. But I'm trying to drive all replay listens to YouTube. Why? Because I've got some grand plans for the next quarter, the next 6 months. It really should be 2 months ago, but it's, you know, next quarter, next 6 months, that we're going to be doing some incredible video shows on YouTube, and I'm just moving all of our content over there, so that's really the more familiar place that people always go and search. So that's number one. Number two, with authors like Jace Payne and musicians like Jules Day that are on the show, oftentimes I hear from listeners afterwards, that was really great, but, you know, how do I go find their music, or how do I go find their books? You know, because Jace has a couple of books out that you just have to read. I have created a very special show link. It's, of course, I don't have it on today's show, because that would mean that I'm prepared. But I've got a great Amazon page for you to go buy all material from any guest that's on the show that sells their stuff on Amazon. You can find this on the Rated G Radio page on Facebook. You can find it in the Garrett Miller Public group, or the group profile or whatever it is, but it's open to like the world, so I don't have to worry about, you know, shutting the faucet off at 5,000 people. And it's also on my page. So if you are listening to the show tonight for the first time and say, what are all these guests that he's talking about? You can go to the Rated G Radio page on Facebook. You can click the link, and everybody that's on there have been guests on the show in the last year or so, pretty much mostly in the last year, because I went back the last 3 years of doing the show, tried to find as many people as I could and put them on there. So if you've been on the show before and want to have the benefit of having your product sold after the show, and by, you know, casual users, maybe somebody's going to be listening to the show tonight for Jace, and then they find, you know, other gay authors that they want to buy their books or other music or other DVDs and say, oh, let's, you know, we got birthdays and Christmas coming up. It's time to go buy, you know, everybody's everything. That would be really cool. But hopefully there's a little cross promotion for all the artists that are on the show. So Go check that out. If you feel inclined to buy something, do that. But tonight, the direct link for Jace's books is actually on the show page. And it just says, buy Jace's books on Amazon from his author's page here. So you go and do that. Support the cause. And without any further ado, as we always like to say on the show, we want to welcome author and superstar Mr. Jace Payne to Rated G Radio. Jace, how are you tonight?
I'm great. Actually, a little nervous, but I'm great. How are you?
Oh, it's just the two of us. Nobody else is listening. The other millions and millions of people around the world who are listening right now, they're not paying attention. They're busy, you know, feeding the kids or vacuuming or going fishing or whatever. So just pretend it's just us, okay?
Okay.
So I've had the pleasure, and I don't really remember how we connected other than we got connected, and it's been a hot minute. And when I first found out that you were an author, I said, you know, we need to get you on the show. And then I found out that you're an LGBT author, and then you also write, like, you know, like supernatural or thriller types of books. And I was like, even better, you know, because it's, you know, it just keeps adding to the dynamic of what an interesting character you're going to be. And we're going to talk about you in just a second. And we finally got you booked, and you sent me your book, Dark South Shifter. And you, I will tell you, you are very, very good, Jace, about following up and saying, have you read the book? You know, what do you think? Do you have any questions? And I kept saying, it's too close to the show date. I won't, or it's too far out. I won't have time to read it until we get close to the show date. And so this morning at about 7:30 in the morning, I finally opened up the book, Dark South Shifter, available on Amazon. Of course, go buy his book tonight. And I will tell you, I'm on page 100 of 196. And
wow.
I hate to tell you, I didn't get farther along in the book because I had other things that I had to do today, but every spare second that I had, I was reading the book and going, I can't believe this is happening, or wow, this is really happening, or I didn't see this coming. And so I'm up to chapter 21, and that's, you probably know in the course of the book where we're at, but really a easy read, and I like that because, you know, some books you read and authors like to impress you with their $8 words that only they and their publisher know the meanings of, and that is not the case here. It's a book that you can pick up very easily. You are immediately introduced to the characters, and it's something that I think you set the tone very quickly as far as what happened, and you'll talk about that, but the book really starts to come alive easily, and it's a page-turner. So with that, before we're going to talk about Dark South Shifter, Jace, tell us about you. Who are you? How come I haven't heard about you until now?
Because I am a poor Bostonian stuck in Alabama, so it's kind of like a little Bermuda Triangle down here.
Okay, fair enough. So how do you end up going from Boston down to the South, and where are you in the South?
I am in northeastern Alabama. I actually moved down to be closer to my mother's family, who were all in Alabama.
And so
did you... someplace nice like Italy.
Well, I mean, there's always Italy. You can get a timeshare or something there. So did you grow up in Boston then?
Yes, I did.
So I have a question for you, because I've been to Boston, I think, once or twice, and I thought it was a very lovely city, but I also hit the city at perfect times of the year as far as traveling was concerned. Did you love the winters and the snow that you guys had there?
That was my least favorite thing about living in Boston.
So
if I ever had to move back, I would probably take a hiatus during the winter months.
Yeah, and so what was your favorite part?
My favorite part was springtime, because that's when I could start going back to the beach again. The beach is my happy place, and I've always lived at least within 20 minutes of the beach. So,
that is awesome.
Once the sun came out, I was on the beach.
Okay, so now this is a little off track, but I'm going to ask you this about the beaches in Boston. Then, or where do you go to the beach in Boston? I know they've got like the river that passes. I should know my geography, but they've got the river that passes through there. So, at what temperature was it acceptable to go to a beach, and where did you go?
Actually, basically, if you were able to go outside without a jacket and not shiver, it was okay to go to the beach.
Fair enough.
We waited for that moment. But my favorite beach actually isn't in Boston. It's actually in Provincetown, the famous gay town at the tip of Cape Cod. That is one of the best beaches I've ever been to. It's wonderful.
Now, Now, did you go for, like, and I guess the big time there is, you know, of course, during the summer. Now, do they have, like, a gay pride that they have there, or is it just pretty much all summer is gay pride just because of the population that's there?
Provincetown in summer is basically full-time gay pride.
Well, that doesn't sound bad. So how do you get there? Do you have to take, like, ferries and shuttle boats and things like that, or is it something you drive to?
Actually, you can. There is a ferry that leaves from Boston that drives. I mean, that well, not drives. It floats on down to Provincetown. You can take the commuter rail from Boston straight to Provincetown. Actually, no, you can't. I take that back. There's only two ways. I've been gone for 5 years. Forgive me. You can either take the ferry or you drive.
Okay, and then so.
But
how long does it take?
It's a two-hour drive about.
2 hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad. Okay, and so what kind of things do you do in P-Town for fun? There's shows and things like that, but isn't it just more like everybody hangs out and barbecues?
Yeah, there was pretty much. I was taken by a friend of mine for the first time, and I was schooled in the ways of Provincetown, especially for the people who stay there long term during the summer. Some people just go for the day, but some people actually plan their vacations for it and rent condos. So I went with a friend of mine that had one, and basically we would wake up, eat, go to the beach for 3 hours, go to brunch, and go to a tea dance, which is a really big thing, which is basically drinking outdoors in the middle of the day and socializing, sometimes dancing. Then dinner, and then you go to the clubs, get out, pass out, and basically repeat the next day.
All summer long. How cool is that? Okay. So now, when you got ready to – did you go to school at college out there too?
I went to elementary school in Boston. Actually, I moved to Alabama twice. In the middle, I moved back to Boston. But I went to public high school in Alabama for the first time and hated it. So actually, I dropped out when I was 17 and got my GED.
Oh, cool. Okay. So how did you start your path as a writer then? Because, number one, you write very, very well. I love your writing because it's easy to read. I hate books that are hard to read. Yours is very easy. So Dark South Shifter is a perfect book if you are LGBT and are looking for, you know, a thriller or a horror type of a book that is going to be something that you can totally get into quickly. So how did you – I mean, were you always a writer?
No, I definitely was not always a writer. Before I was 24, I hadn't been diagnosed with ADHD, so I had a hard enough time reading, which is a bigger deal to people with ADHD than some people think. So I wasn't very confident in my skills. I never tried writing before that. But once I did get my diagnosis and got on medicine for my ADHD and started moving forward with my life, I decided to go to college, but I wanted to try online at first just to get my feet wet and figured I would transfer to a in-person college. But I did the typical college thing, and I had at least four different majors before I settled on one. Creative writing was the last one I tried. You could either specialize in nonfiction, fiction, or poetry. So I went with fiction. And after the first couple of workshops, I was surprised at how much I loved it and that I could actually do it. So that was not only did I find a major I liked, I discovered that I actually had a skill, and it was fun.
Sure. So,
and then I started to play with that skill more often.
What were the other four majors that you toyed around with before you found writing?
I was a forensics major. I was a history major. I was a psychology major and a mathematics major.
Now, did any of those help you as you began your career as a writer, as far as, you know, the stories that you'd pick to write or the, you know, how you would research things?
Yes. Everyone helped me except mathematics. I just don't get math. So that was useful to me.
Okay, so then I have to ask you, okay, if you know math is going to be terrible for you, how in the world do you think, you know what, I'm just going to try math out because, you know, I hate it, so I might as well try it out as a major?
Actually, it was it was the planned first step in my path to becoming an astrophysicist, which is still a passion of mine, but, you know, we can't do everything at one time, so.
Okay.
One of the preferred benefits, I mean, precursors for getting into a graduate program for astrophysics is mathematics or, you know, physics courses, but seeing in my area there were no physics courses, the only option was mathematics.
Well, that totally makes sense then. I love that story. Okay, so that does make sense. So when you started to get into writing, what was one of the first stories that you wrote that really had that light bulb go off for you?
It was a story I wrote. We had to write them weekly for class, so every week it was a different short story. But this one actually was inspired by Hansel and Gretel. I just decided to take the story and just screw it up as much as I possibly could and turn it in. And people liked it.
Right on. So what did you do in the story?
This is when I first started going toward more adult themes. I have a hard time relating to stories with younger people.
Okay.
So one of the first changes I made is Hansel and Gretel were all grown up, and for some reason, like a horrific Cabin in the Woods scenario just played in my head. I'm like, I'm just going to take it in that direction. And I took out the paranormal element, but kept the general idea of horrible cannibalistic person in the woods and two happy-go-lucky people have to go there. But I just gave it the Halloween Friday the 13th treatment.
I love that. Now, one of your favorite holidays is coming up. Talk about that.
Oh, Halloween is definitely my favorite holiday. Of course, growing up in Massachusetts, I was very close to Salem, where Halloween is, as far as they're concerned, the only holiday of the year. That is when people flood to northeastern Massachusetts. But growing up, I loved everything about Halloween. It was my favorite time of year, and I was always sad when it was over. But it's always been a really big deal for me.
So do you have your costume already planned out for this year?
Not quite. That takes some thinking. Every year I go to the Rocky Horror Masquerade Ball. That's in a town an hour north of me. So that takes quite some preparation beforehand, and I have yet to pick a costume for it.
So what would be some of the costumes that you've gone to in the past that were, like, really spectacular or how about, like, time-consuming to put together? Because, you know, for me, I would go to the store at, like, Kmart and try to find, like, the, you know, 79-cent mask and call it a day.
Actually, it was my first time going to Rocky Horror. I hadn't seen the movie before then, which a lot of people scolded me for. So I watched it before I went and got a feel for it. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to go and drag.
Wow.
And I had an idea in my head, being a fan of RuPaul's Drag Race, of what would go into it. I was wrong. That was the most time-consuming incident of me putting on a Halloween costume. Even with 2 hours preparation time, by the time I was we were ready to go, I'm like, I'm not ready yet. I'm like, I don't know how drag queens do it. I was just completely spastic by the end.
Had you ever, you know, like, put music or music? Have you ever put makeup on or, you know, any of that type of stuff? Or was that all just, like, nudity? Did you have help?
Actually, no. Growing up, I was actually really, really good at art. It was one of the few things that I developed my skills in most, and that slid into painting. So when I went to do the makeup for drag, I just viewed it as me painting on canvas, only the canvas was my face.
I love that. So did you win any awards or anything like that? Or did, you know, people comment, either good or bad? Did they go, you know, Jace, this is something you should never do? Or did they go, holy cow, you should be making a career out of this?
One of my friends actually was rather stunned. He comes from a very conservative religious family. And he really had never been in the presence of a drag queen before. Not that I would consider myself a drag queen because I don't have that kind of experience. But when he first set eyes on me, once I was in costume, he kind of had that eye bulging thing, and I took that as, oh my God, my eyelashes fell off, or you know, something like that. My makeup, my lipstick is smeared. But the first thing he told me, he's like, I can't believe how much you look like a woman.
Wow.
I'm like, well, that means the 2 hours I spent scrambling in the bathroom worked. So, trying to get
ready.
Good.
Very good. So let's get back to your writing here. So you got you started to get a little bit of inspired, and you get some writing, behind your belt. Did you think before you sat down to do your first book that you would ever be a writer like that?
No. I told you I got started in school, but after that I was trying to find ways to exercise my writing, in different ways, instead of just writing short stories or just posting random things on Twitter. I thought I'd start a blog, and I have absolutely no idea what popped into my head to make me write erotic short stories, but I did. And people started reading them. And I thought that was cool, and I started getting requests for more. And I would write more and take suggestions about different themes that they would like to see. And one of my followers actually said that she thought I should write a book. At first, I kind of laughed it off. I'm like, I can write a short story, but I don't think I could sit down and write a whole book. That wasn't really feasible in my head. But I actually got in contact with my current publisher, and at the time they said they would look at my blog, and they did. And I was surprised when they wrote me back asking me to submit a manuscript.
Really?
So I basically sat down, and I'm not sure how I wrote the first draft of Shifter, but actually I managed to get it done, and I submitted it. It was rejected the first time, but they gave me great feedback, which I was fortunate to get. I resubmitted, all changes made that they wanted, and they gave me a contract.
Wow.
So basically it happened so fast that I'm still in process of trying to understand how this is all happening.
How amazing is that? So what, before you were a writer, I mean, what were some of like the jobs that you had? What would be shocking to people to hear that you did? Because everybody thinks, when you're a writer, you just sit down and you magically have your million-dollar book deal, and then, it's lifestyles and the rich and famous after that. But it's a lot of work before it ever gets to that point.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a lot of work. But my very first job, I actually have in common with Patrick Swayze. Patrick Swayze saw an ad for Arthur Murray Dance Studio and answered it and became a ballroom dance instructor, and that's exactly what I did. Except instead of an ad, I was watching the first episode of Dancing with the Stars when it first premiered.
Holy cow, that's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. So how long were you a dance instructor?
About 2 years, actually.
So was there anything about that that you really liked, and is there anything that you just totally hated about it?
Okay, I have an answer for both. The biggest thing that I loved about it, and this is what we would tell people when they asked us what we did for a living, I said, I'm a professional partier. I would go to work every day, loud music, dancing with different people. Then, it kind of sounds like a tea party. And it becomes a big family, especially when you have students who stick around for a long time. Some people come in just for their wedding, and then, you see them for a few weeks, and then they're gone. But quite a bit of the time, you have students that stick around for 4 or 5 years, so you go to work, and you're having all this fun, and you're hanging out with people that you see as family. So it was a really great job. And I feel fortunate, because not everyone can say they really love their first job, and I did.
And so how did that end up? Did it help, keep you in shape? I mean, well, you're still a young guy, so you can eat 10 million calories a day of pizza and, be fine. But, did it help you? I would assume the dancing probably helped, keep you in shape and that type of thing. Did you have to do anything else outside of that to, keep your, figure in check?
Oh, absolutely not. Basically, time-wise, I would be dancing 11 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Wow, that is.
So if I did anything outside of that, I probably would have killed myself.
Yeah, probably. Well, let's start talking about your book. We've got about 5 minutes before we're going to take our commercial break. So tell us a little bit about this first novel, and I'd love you to kind of take us on the journey of, you know, your writing process? I mean, did you know that this was the book that you were going to write when you sat down to do it? You know, did you sit down with a pen and paper? Do you write on a computer? Do you have a special spot in the house? You know, all that stuff. You know, what is your process as you get ready to sit down and write those first few words?
The first thing I did with Shifter, I started with a concept, and this was actually a submission call from my publisher. They wanted going home stories for people who have spent a great deal of time away from home and the process of going back and the things that can go wrong or right with that. So I basically started with that and had a character who moved away from home and had to go back. But the next thought was, how can I do that but can make the experience as miserable as possible for him and throw a little romance in at the same time?
Okay.
So it took quite a few drafts. But that's basically how I started, was with the concept, and that was like a man or woman having to go home after an extended period of time. And then I just let it build from there. I built slowly. And I'm an organic writer, so I don't typically plan a book out from start to finish. I'll at least plan the first chapter, and then I'll just let it grow and take its own life form by the at that point.
Well, I think that we're a little bit early, but I think this is a great place to actually do a little bit of a commercial break, and we'll do that and come back with author Jace Payne. His book is called Dark. Dark South. That's how it comes up on my PDF. So if it's Shifter and Dark South, what is the official title of your book?
It's actually Shifter. It will be part of the series, so it'll be Shifter, Dark South.
Okay. Because on how I'm reading it, it comes up as the title Dark South Shifter, but that's how it was just saved on the computer. So it's really Shifter. So this is the book we're talking about, folks. So hang tight. We're going to be back in just a minute with author Jace Payne, and we'll see you after the commercial from Rainbow Brew. Hang tight.
Right back with more Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM 950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the queen bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
Yum! Get some Rainbow Brew coffee any chance you get. They're out of Minneapolis, St. Paul. I say this every night that they sponsor the show, but I find it so hard to believe that you can have fantastic coffee beans grown out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and have them be a brand. But Rainbow Brew does it, and they ship their coffee beans all over the country and around the world. So if you are looking for something fun that supports an LGBT business, I encourage you to do that. And, of course, as you're watching the show on Blog Talk, this is not true on the YouTube channel, because on the YouTube channel I just feature the artist and where to go buy their stuff. But as you're watching the show on the Blog Talk, there are different commercials on the slides that you see for different businesses that are helping support the show. So I always say, if you have a need for some jewelry, Carol Sweets Jewelry is there. We've got some artist workshop. We've got social media promotions and all kinds of good things like that. So thanks to everybody who is part of that. But we are joined tonight with author Jace Payne. His book is called Shifter. And now that we're into the second half of the show and everybody's kind of, you know, settled into their easy chairs as we're listening to the show tonight. Jace, tell us about, I know that you had the short story, but, you know, tell us about the book, you know, where the story starts, where it goes, what people should expect from it, and, you know, maybe, you know, without getting into too much graphic detail, because, you know, after all, this still is a somewhat family show, maybe share some of the, you know, romance and things that people can expect to read in the book.
Well, again, it's a going-home story for the main character, Caden. He lives in Boston, but he grew up in Georgia, in a fictional town that I created for Shifter. But before he actually makes it home, he has an encounter with a man that he's been seeing casually, we should say, who, unbeknownst to Caden, is a werewolf with a really bad attitude, actually. And things escalate between the two, and Caden ends up being scratched by this werewolf literally 2 days or so before he goes back home to Georgia to see his older parents. So not only does he have to worry about going home and how they're going to react to seeing him because he hasn't been keeping in contact as much as he should have, now he has to worry about the fact that he's a werewolf too.
And so where does his journey take Kate? I mean, because, you know, he's got a couple of friends. Well, he has a friend that actually goes with him. And I loved the kind of backstory with her as well. And how did you decide that would be the type of friend that you wanted to bring into the story with him?
There are a couple of reasons for that. I actually based that character on Kat Dennings from Two Broke Girls. I absolutely adore her, but she has that. She's beautifully feminine, but she has that mouth on her that is just unspeakable. The thing she says, I absolutely adore her. But I also wanted to give him a best friend that would kind of fill the void because he hasn't had good relationships and he has no family where he is. So I wanted her to be that person that was kind of his little support system. And he's her support system just as much as she's his. And I have a friend like that, and I thought it was a nice place to kind of blend them all together. But I also had another thing in mind when I created her, is I wanted to create a female character that could be both beautiful, feminine, sexy, and still have that element of I can kick your butt. So I don't believe in creating the damsel in distress. That's been done to death, and it's not very fun, and it's also not realistic to women in general. It's not fair to say that they always need someone to protect them, because in this instance with the character of Annette, she 9 times out of 10 can handle herself more than some other people could. So that's what I had in mind when I created Annette, which kind of, she took on a life of her own as the story went along.
And then what happens after they get to Georgia? Because I love one of the things that I like about your book here, Shifter, and again, everybody has to go get it tonight, is the fact that you don't really waste a lot of time, getting characters involved with each other. And the way that you write the character interactions, I would have to say, you know, I'm reading it going, yeah, I could see that happening. I believe that. You know, it wasn't like I'm reading this going, oh, come on, you've got to be kidding me. Nobody's going to buy this. The interactions that you have as, you know, Caden gets to the airport in Georgia, I want you to talk about, you know, the character that you introduce here. I read that and I could totally see this being, you know, something that would take place in an airport or any place. But I just thought it was very clever about how you made all of this happen and the story that kind of goes along with that. So who does Caden meet when they get to the airport that is kind of a surprise for him?
He meets Paul, who is a houseman that's been hired by his parents, who he later finds out that they took him in. And him being their kind of groundskeeper, handyman kind of person is what he does to help them for what they did for him. So Caden meets him at the airport because obviously with him helping these people, they're an older couple. They're going to go to the airport. He'll probably need to be there to help with luggage. So it makes sense that he would show up. But the only thing is Caden doesn't know anything about Paul because of him not calling and keeping in touch the way he should. So it's a nice little surprise for him when he actually decides on his parents and then there's this giant man next to him.
What? And the thing that I thought was fun was that your female character, and I call her, is it fair to call her Nettie? But, you know, she really has an official formal name. But, you know, between Caden and Nettie, you know, when they first meet Paul, they are both kind of vying for Paul's attention.
Yeah, in the first few minutes of them meeting him, they obviously aren't aware of his sexual orientation or his marital status. They're basically seeing a hot guy and who's going to get to him first. But they do it in a playful way. I didn't want to create any animosity between them because that's not what their relationship is about. But it was a more of a playful, who's going to get them first kind of thing they had going on. But it wasn't necessarily a serious thing. But it was a little fun thing I wanted to do with them because of the serious tone the book was going to take later on. I don't want people depressed from A to Z. So.
Well, and it does go dark fairly quickly. But before that happens, what ends up taking place? I guess without giving away too much, but just to kind of let the listeners hear a little bit about what the plot involves. I know it's a going home story, but you have a lot of like supernatural things that you start to incorporate into the book fairly quickly. I know you've talked about, you know, the werewolves and that type of thing, but what takes place once they, you know, get back to the plantation?
Once they get back to the plantation, Caden is getting acclimated to being home again. He's also getting Nettie acclimated to her new southern surroundings, which she's not used to, and dealing with the fact that he has an upcoming change coming, his werewolf change, the first one, and mentally dealing with that. And that's something that's going to put a little cloud over what should be a happy time of him going home. So he kind of has to put on the facade of, I'm really happy, everything's fine, I'm, you know, home, it's good. And then there's this really big volcano bubbling underneath the surface that he can't do anything about.
So what is the relationship between Caden and Paul? How does that start or, you know, develop as we start getting into the chapters here?
They start bonding as Caden starts going through more changes that Paul understands because he has the similar affliction. So just by spending more time together, it allows some things to become known, and it just brings them closer with the more that's revealed. And it's just by spending time together and Paul noticing that there is something wrong with Caden, just even though he won't say.
And so I'm the kind of person, by the way, Jace, that if I'm going to a movie and it's about the Titanic, I like to know that the Titanic sinks before I go see the movie. And I know everybody else is like, don't tell me the end of the movie. So, you know, I don't want to spoil it for everybody else because I haven't gotten to the end of the book, so I'm not going to ask you. So what ends up happening? I'm going to finish the book tonight. And so then I'll send you my, I can't believe this happened, Jace. But what starts happening through the course of the book that listeners will want to know. So if they're kind of on the fence going, you know, I'd kind of like to buy the book, but I'm not really sure if I know enough about it. What would be something else that would, you know, really draw people in?
Well, as time goes by and Caden spends more time with Paul, he realizes not only does he have this problem with being a werewolf, a new werewolf at that, and thinking that's like a really big deal, the biggest deal at the moment for him. And then when Paul's skeletons come out of the closet, they kind of overshadow anything that Caden had been previously worried about. So he's kind of taking that whole, when you think things are the worst, they're probably not. And Paul on the surface appears to be the perfect, I'd like to call him the Brawny Man, because that's kind of what I had in my mind as I wrote his character. And every time I read him, he probably looks like the Brawny Man right now from People's Troubles. But, you know, when you have somebody that perfect, there's always something going on underneath. I'm like, what can I do to just throw a wrench in their relationship? I'm like, oh, I know. So skeletons in the closet come in handy.
I love that. Well, we've got about 20 more minutes into the show, and so I'm going to say, because I think anything else that Jace is going to reveal about Shifter then starts giving away too much, and then you'll be like, well, they talked about that on the show. I already heard about that. So I want everybody to go to Jace's Amazon page and click the Here button, you know, because that's where you're going to buy it. You click here, and you can buy all of his books, but you can also go to Rated G Radio, and there's a link for an Amazon Rated G Radio Superstar Swag is what we call it. You can buy his books there as well. So, Jace, what other books do you have in the works that you're working on, and what can you tell us about your journey as a writer now that you've finally published?
my journey, now that I've been published, is going to be a never-ending journey. So that's the short answer for that. You never stop learning. You never stop coming up with ideas for your next book or something you want to write. So getting into it, I realized just how encompassing it is when you become published. It's just a whirlwind of things, and I'm still new, so I'm still getting used to all of it, but it's definitely going to be a never-ending journey, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
So what else, what's the book that you're working on right now?
Actually, my next book is coming out October 13th. It's called Northridge. This story actually is different than my first two novels, as the characters are 18 and 19, so it's a coming-of-age story, which I honestly wouldn't have seen myself writing maybe a few months ago, but I just got an idea for it, and I wrote it, and the one thing that I wanted to make different about it is I didn't want to make whiny young people. It's paranormal, and it's romantic, and they're young, but I wanted to write a realistic portrayal of what it would be like for a young person moving out on their own for the first time, and as much as they wanted to go smoothly, it just, you know, things happen. But
so
there's
what,
a strong paranormal undercurrent to that story.
Okay, Jace, that's like teasing us incredibly unfairly. What kind of things are going to be taking place in this book?
Oh, boy. Maybe a few attempts of attempted murder, a bit of occultism. I think those are the big elements of that, but at the
okay.
Course of a coming-of-age story, but it's a coming-of-age story dealing with being on your own for the first time and then having a whole host of crap that just is piled on top of that.
I think that's cool. I need to find – you know what? I want to have you back for that book too. I think I'm looking at my book, and we'll talk offline because otherwise it's fascinating listening to Garrett turn pages in his guest log to figure out when he has dates. But let's get you back in November. I think that probably like after Thanksgiving will be my first opportunity to have you back. But I'd love to have you back to talk about that book so we can hopefully move some merch and sell some books for you there. So
sounds
let me,
great to me.
Okay, well, then it's done, so we'll figure out that. So I want to go back and talk more about you and find out a little bit about what inspires you. Did you have – I know you said that you had ADHD, so that impacted your ability to, you know, write and read and do some things like that, but do you have favorite authors that you have enjoyed over the years that really helped kind of shape how you wanted to write?
Definitely. Going back to my love of Halloween, I love anything that is – dark, creepy, supernatural, spooky, you name it. So when I discovered Edgar Allan Poe, that was one of the literary inspirations that I had as a child. But I have to say one of my biggest inspirations was Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
I love her. Oh, my gosh. Have you met her yet?
Yes. I wish I were that lucky.
Okay, well, we'll work on I think she's like 800 years old, and the lady looks just, you know, like she's 30. She looks fantastic.
She's amazing, and she can, for a woman who's been around for quite a little while, that dress, she can still wear it better than anyone.
Yeah.
So, and it's extremely low cut, so I applaud her.
Yeah. So as a writer, where is your favorite place to write? Do you have a place in your house that you like to go, or do you go to a Starbucks and sit out at the internet cafe, or what do you do?
My writing spot actually is wherever it's quiet. So for me, places like coffee houses aren't good for writing because, again, the ADHD, if there's too much stimulus around me, then I can't get anything done. So it really has to be a quiet, serene place, so I can get into that mental zone. So that place can change daily, hourly, by the minute.
And so when you are sitting down to write, what comes first? Do you have the characters in mind, or do you have a plot in mind? What is I'm always fascinated because I when I read a book like this, it just kind of evolves, and I'm just going like, oh, this is totally exactly how it should be. But I know that you said you're an organic writer, but do you sit down with a character in mind, or do you I don't know. You tell me. What is your process?
Most times it's an idea. Since I write paranormal, I know that's going to be the tone, but I want to try something new with paranormal. So I'm always thinking about what haven't people seen before in a story, what kind of story would be fun, just a basic little spark of what I want to write for a book. It could be anything. And then I take that one thing and I just let it evolve, as you said, from there.
So for your book, for this book, now, was it your publisher's idea to do a coming-of-age story, or is this something that you decided that you wanted to do?
It was just something I did to spur of the moment. That's typically how I write. Once an idea pops in my head, no matter, I don't know how it gets there or why, but when that idea came up, that was just something I needed to write. It wasn't for a submission call or anything like that. It just popped into my head, and I took that one little idea, and it grew into Northridge.
I love that. And so what's your main goal as an author when you're creating a story? What do you want to have happen?
My main goal is to create quality gay fiction. Growing up, there weren't a lot of books that I could read fiction-wise to live vicariously through. There just weren't that many, and the ones that I could find weren't that great. So I'm not tooting my own horn or anything, but my goal is to create books for gay men who might not have a thriving social life, or who love to read, or any reason to, whatever reason they should have to pick up a book, I want them to be able to pick up something that they can enjoy reading, especially gay fiction in general, not just romance. I believe that there should be more gay fiction that's up to par to other things. It shouldn't be, you know, how people feel about gay movies. We have gay movies, but they're not that great. So I want to kind of change that for the gay book scene.
I love that. Now, I will tell you that if you are squeamish or don't like adult-themed writing, that Shifter may be something that raises your eyebrows a little bit. I'm not going to tell you not to read it because, you know, I think you should read everything. But I will tell you that, you know, Jace writes some very erotic scenes between, well, I'm only up to the part with Paul and Caden in the book, that I think as a reader of just any book, I think that you might find a little surprising. But I also think that the style of how he writes those types of scenes is not only believable, but I think it interesting enough that it's erotic, but it doesn't come across as, what's a good word here, Jace? I don't know, but it doesn't come across where, you know, it's like cheesy or, you know, the throbbing whatever, and, you know, it's like, it's not like one of those types of novels where you're like, oh, good Lord, nobody calls it that, or that we don't think about things in those types of manner. You write it in a way that you can picture things happening and going down and going, okay, that was kind of exciting, but it was, you know, it's certainly not something that, you know, you read and you're going, this is just really out of place. So how did you fine tune your ability to write erotic within your novel?
That took a lot of work and guidance from my editor. I had to actually learn I was really good at writing the sex, actually. I had to tone it down. It wasn't an author coming in and not knowing how to write sex. I had to work in the opposite direction. So I was good at writing the sex, but it lacked a little bit of romance. So it's that's one of the most difficult parts to write of a lot of romance, so, actually.
So what did you do to kind of get that infused into the stories? Because it does come across, at, you know, again, very believable when you're reading it, and hot. So as a writer, when you get that feedback from your editor, what do you have to do yourself to, you know, kind of put yourself in the zone to, you know, fix the things that they have made suggestions on?
Whenever I get a suggestion from an editor, I'm extremely open because I realize this is a person who knows way more than I do, and it'd probably be in my best interest to listen. And everything she's told me has worked out so far, so I'm going to keep listening to her. But it actually, when it comes to making those little changes, sometimes it's easy to one question, like you mentioned, is this believable? If it's not, how could I do this in a way that people will look at it and say, oh, yeah, that could happen? Or, as you said, sometimes they have those things like, that can't happen. It's kind of, if you look at it and just ask yourself those questions, then you're like, it makes changing it so much easier.
Did you ever get stumped writing the book?
Oh, fine. And the best thing to do when that happens for me is to just leave it alone, because trying to force your way through the blockage just makes the blockage even worse. So I figure if I get stuck, I'm stuck for a reason, and I just take a little time off.
So how much is a little time off? Months, or is it, you know, an hour, or is there a typical time that you need to kind of distance yourself from your work before you go back?
It's usually no longer than a day or two, and just enough time to let my mind settle and relax. So when I go back, I can look at it with a fresh pair of eyes. If you take just like 10 minutes and go away and come back, it's not enough time to let your brain, you know, percolate and try to figure out what the problem is. So a day is usually best to give yourself that time.
There you go. And then, so for your book here, I mean, is there any part of Shifter that is maybe a little autobiographical, since this is your first book? Is, you know, other than, you know, going from Boston back down to the South, are there character traits of any of the characters that you really relate to?
The only similarity I would say that I can really relate to is with Caden and understanding the two different worlds of, you know, Boston and then Georgia, with my family growing up in Alabama, and spent quite a bit of time going back and forth between the two. So I understand the feeling of going from the big city to the not-so-big city and the total change in environment. So I was able to understand and relate to his feelings prior to his trip home, which made it a lot easier to get into his head. And again, that's one of those organic things that once you can get inside their head, it just kind of evolves on its own.
I love that. And when you were finished with the book, from a growth and learning perspective, not about the book itself, but about you as a person, did you learn anything that you now reflect back on and go like, holy cow, this and that and the other thing? What journey did you end up at outside of the book when you were done with your first book?
I was at that place where, at the end of the book, where I sat there and realized that I can actually do something that I've previously said I couldn't do. So that gives you a mental change where you can start looking at things in a more positive manner. So now when something seems a little improbable, I'll think back on the fact that I have 3 books published now. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's something
that's
kind
of a big deal.
Impossible.
So what did you do to celebrate once you had your first book out? You know, when you got the first copy in your hand, you could flip the pages. What did you do to celebrate?
Well, since it's only an e-book, I haven't had the chance to actually hold it in my hands yet. But
you know what I mean. You know, on the Kindle, and you flip through the pages, and, you know, it's because you're like, holy cow, I got it done.
Yeah, actually, yeah, the digital version has the same effect, so I was just stunned, and my celebration was just running around telling everyone. I'm like, look, 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 and same thing happened when I finally got the image of the cover. I think that actually was, if not more exciting than the finding out that I got contracted. It's getting the cover art is one of the most exciting parts of it. There's always a little bit of celebration going on, and it's no different now with my third book than it was with my first. It's still like jaw-dropping shock and excitement. And
Right on. I love that. But everybody, it's been author Jace Payne. He's been kind enough to spend his evening with us out of the Deep South. His book is called Shifter. It's available on Amazon. I've got a link to his Amazon author page on the show page. You can click that and go support the cause. As I always say, let's move a little merch. Buy these books. Help support an independent author. And get some reading enjoyment out of this that I think will like shock and awe you like you are not expecting for tonight. So, Jace, I want to thank you for being here, and we'll have you back soon. I'm going to do a little close out of the show tonight with a song for tomorrow morning's Friday dance party with Jules Day. This is her song, Rio. We're going to be playing this tomorrow as well. We'll come back at the very end of the song just to say a quick good night and enjoy Rio. We're going to be playing that tomorrow, but I wanted to give you just a little flavor of what you can expect tomorrow morning on the Friday dance party, live at 9 a.m., 9 to 11 a.m. tomorrow on Friday. Over the weekend, if you're in Southern California, I'm going to be attending the Southern California Writers Conference, and we're going to see noted authors like Jeff Michaels, Gail Carline, Dot Caffrey, and so many more. If you are in the area and a writer, why aren't you going? Or if you're going, make sure to let me know so I can say hi to you. Sunday at 8 a.m. here in Huntington Beach at Dog Beach. Chacho Hollywood, Hollywood's famous Chihuahua, he's in all the dog commercials and dog movies and things like that. Chacho is going to be doing an event with a bunch of dogs at Dog Beach here in Huntington Beach, and I'll encourage you to go and check that out. 8 o'clock Sunday morning at Dog Beach here in Huntington Beach. And that is the show. Everybody have a great night. Don't drive distracted. We will see you live on Friday.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.